Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and the 12 steps. Produced, hosted, and posted by people in recovery who've been given strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Let's do it. We're live? All right, he's giving me a thumbs up. When a white person gives you a thumbs up, it's absolutely positive that this is going to be good. Yeah. That's all amazing. Right, so we're back. We had some tech issues, which is fine. It happens. But I will tell you this. In the past, I would really be freaked out about that.
Really?
Yeah.
For what reason?
Perfection, the pursuit of perfection.
Yeah.
You know? I was at a meeting recently, and then one of the things that said, what list of demands do I put on the day, right? What expectations do I have of the day? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I do is I put this expectation that everything's going to be perfect.
Right.
You know, and everything's going to go to plan. And that's just ridiculous. So I think that's what in the past would freak me out. But now, enjoying the process, having people with me that we're all in this together really helps.
Yeah, the journey for sure. I agree.
Yeah.
I recently came through that too. Yeah. You know, really not caring what being on video,
right,
saying what I say, not really caring what people think about it,
right,
you know, about me.
Right.
You know, I want them to enjoy what I talk about, but
right,
as far as that insecurity of, crap, man, I'm not doing it perfect. I'm not saying what I need to say. So yeah, I feel you.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I'm gonna be honest, I think what it ultimately boils down to is a fundamental distrust in God. Mm. I think that's where it comes from. I think the fear, the desire to be perfect, is to not allow God to be perfect or to trust that God is good.
Right.
Right. And so I therefore have to make up the gap between God's imperfections mm-hmm. and my perfection. Ultimately, I think that's where it comes from. Because when I've met people who really, you've ever met someone who they just seem like they have this connection with God. They have this stillness about them, the strongness about them, yet a humility and softness. And you see those kind of people and you're like, okay, this person, a friend of mine, Bill, Bill's watching this. He is that way. And gentle, soft, gone through some of the worst times this last year, but always maintains the stillness, the steadfastness.
The trust.
He also died and came back to life.
Oh, wow.
Which I think might have something to do with his ability to see life
in a different
way. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, man. So one of the things that I love about people who have come through No Longer Bound is there is some deeper understanding of kind of life and what we're doing, mm-hmm. right? And so we started earlier and we had to restart the stream. You were telling us your story and kind of how early in your childhood your father passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And you used that as a, I guess, an excuse really.
Mm-hmm. No, I did.
To do what you want and get high and run around and just be rebellious, right?
Throw my life away.
Yeah.
For sure.
So you start using drugs at that time. When is it that you feel like it transitions from you being a rebellious youngster and abusing drugs to now you have a physical addiction and you need these things to get by?
I'd say not too long after. You know, he passed away when I was 15, so 16, I'd say close to 17. Now I'm physically addicted. Now it's heroin, cocaine.
Oh, that early, you jumped right into it.
Wow. Yeah, and I also went to recovery early. I went to No Longer Bound in 2011 when I was 19. So I didn't have that 20-year run like we do see in the recovery field.
Yeah.
I got lucky in the sense that I had people around me, you know, my family, my mom specifically, that were like, no, and then shut it down. Uh-huh. And I can get to that in my story, but, you know, essentially was put in a spot where I had no choice but to listen and make the right decision into going into recovery.
So at a young age, you tried recovery. How many times did you try it?
Real recovery, as far as going into a program, No Longer Bound was the one time.
Yeah.
Other than that, you know, I'd get out of jail and I'd be like, okay, I'm not doing that. And that'd last 2 weeks, maybe 30 days.
What were you getting arrested for?
Underage consumption, possession, whatever. That was the extent of the multiple arrests that I had. And I'd get out of jail again. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that.
Uh-huh.
And that never lasted.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that's interesting at such a young age. I mean, I think for me too, I started using, smoking and drinking around 12, 13.
Mm-hmm.
And then it escalated pretty quickly. Things got really dark when I started doing methamphetamines.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was probably, you know, 16 years old, 17 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, if I'm thinking about it. I mean, I probably was pretty much right up in there. David, who's here helping out today, his story, I feel like it kind of resonates here too, that as a young age, he was the party scene,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you mentioned this, that you used to say that it was to be socially accepted and to mm-hmm. fit in. So what is it that, why do you feel like that's not the story now for you?
I just reevaluating who I am now and yeah. like putting it together, like, hey, you know what? It was actually, I wanted to stand out. I wanted to be the go-to person. Yeah. So it always came back to fitting in, but the macro of it was, I want to stand out.
Yeah.
I want to be that dude that people call and want to gravitate towards.
Yeah.
Whether they did or not, that was what the goal was.
Okay, so let me ask you this, just real talk. So what today, do you still feel that tension in desiring to be the one that stands out? Or and if you do, what do you do about that?
I think there's definitely that thing in me that still has that because yeah. I'm still driven. I mean, you know, in fact, it's escalated. I'm even more passionate.
Yeah.
I think for me is I definitely still want to stand out in the sense that I can be someone to look towards in recovery, whether that be from, you know, my wife
yeah.
looks up to me to be the man of the house or my family looks up to me to be the example, mm-hmm. whatnot. Does that answer?
Yeah, I think so. But I think what you're doing is, you know, I think there's a concept or language that talks about false self, true self.
For sure.
You know, and so it's kind of like taking these, we have these gifts and curse, right? And so this thing that was a curse initially, this desire to stand out, was actually a divine imprint in you to stand out. But when you do it in humility and you do it for the right reasons.
It's redeemed, for sure.
Right.
I'm picking up what you're laying down now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Definitely has, the motives have changed.
Yeah.
And what was inside of me, like you just said, that's changed in the right. sense that the motives and the heart behind it are definitely better.
Yeah, absolutely. So things escalate pretty quick for you, and you get in trouble, legal trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2011, that's when you went into
No Longer Bound.
Yep. No Longer Bound. Okay. When did you go in? What month?
May of 2011.
Okay. Yeah. So I went to Penfield August 2011.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're right there at around the same time. So you went in there, and now that's pretty extensive, in depth, long term.
Yeah. No Longer Bound's a 12-month residential treatment center. So you live there, work there.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going there for you, not yeah. anybody else.
Right.
And that's weeded out pretty quickly. You know, we only, the admissions process is thorough in the sense that we, typically the guys that end up coming in are the guys that want it the most and that right. have kind of put that work into it.
Well, and that makes a better culture of recovery because everyone who's there.
For sure.
Wants to be there.
I agree 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. So you get in there and you start doing the work while you're there.
Mm-hmm.
And did you complete the program?
Yes, I did.
Okay. What do you think about that process? When did you start feeling like your identity shifted, you know, from this? I think for a lot of us addicts, we put on these identities in addiction, right?
Mm-hmm.
The victim, I think, is a big one, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
We put on this victim mentality or this victim identity, and and then the identity of escapism, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't handle this. I'm going to escape. What were the identities or the false identities that you felt like you wore really as in addiction and in the program where did you see that shift?
So again, it's definitely my father passing away. That was the biggest, you know, and when I tell my story, I was raised good. I had a good family. We had everything we wanted. Yeah. You know, I wasn't born into a trap house or below poverty. Right. Like, I didn't have those things. Right. I had what we wanted. We lived in a great subdivision in Cumming, Georgia. My dad made good money. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. But for me, it was when he passed away, I had that excuse. And I had that card to pull every time I messed up. And it was subconsciously pulled. I didn't say, oh, my dad's dead, I'm right. doing this. It was just people right. understood that, I think. Or at least yeah. I thought they did. And then even in the program, I always had that too. Until mm-hmm. I got to actually grieve that death, 7-8 months into the program. So.
Oh, tell me about that. I mean, talk me through that. What was that like to finally shoot? How many years later?
At that point, let's
almost
see.
10 or around 10?
Well, at that point, it was only 4 years. He died in 2008.
Oh, okay.
So I hadn't touched it until then. Like the day he died, I still feel this way. It was so weird. It's like the Twilight Zone, man. Like I didn't even know how to feel at that point. I mean, I remember being angry, but you know, my brother was 12 and I had to go pick him up from the bus stop and he crumbled, you know. He's lost his dad at 12 years old, man.
Right.
So I was like, I got to be tough. So I'm not crying. I'm not,
right.
you know, I am by myself or with my friends when I'm drunk, I'm crying, but it's not real. That's not grieving.
Yeah.
It felt like I thought I was doing something mm-hmm. about it. But when I got to No Longer Bound and started stripping away those layers and getting to that point where, all right, now it's time to face that and talk about that and really figure out what it is that's going on. And at bottom line, I just really missed him. Mm. And to be able to say that and not be angry at him or at God, it was pretty amazing right. for me. And that's where that shifted. Now it's not a crutch or anything like that. Now it's, I'm okay with it in the sense that he loved us, he took care of us, and I see that now.
Yeah. That's amazing, man. Like the concept that, you know, how we do that, how we, when faced with something like that, because not everybody does that, right? Like some people face tragedy and experience it, grieve it, feel it then, go through that process, mm-hmm. and then move on.
I never understood that.
Right, yeah. And so it's not till many years later that you're finally able to really acknowledge that. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that was true for me in treatment where I had to give up some, I had to forgive some people.
Oh, for
and
sure.
I remember a specific prayer when I prayed it, that what felt like this big, heavy weight in the prayer as I gave it over was this little pebble like this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you know, God was like, oh, I'll carry that for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, that burden's light. Right. And giving me his burden, which is light. And so, but for so long, I wore that. And I think there's something to that, man. Like, for us addicts is, you know, it's like that shame and that guilt, right, that kicks in. It's like, I deserve to feel this way. I deserve to feel bad about myself.
For sure.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
What have you done to combat that kind of stuff, that negative self-talk and the concept that you deserve peace or that you're worthy of a full life in recovery?
Yeah, so going through No Longer Bound, like, I was raised Catholic, okay? And that scared the heck out of me, and I ran from it years ago when I was a kid. But when I got back to No Longer Bound, it wasn't that I didn't want anything to do with God. I was just like, how could there be a God that cares and loves us so much, right?
Right.
But he's let me shoot dope in my arm
right.
and throw my life away. And my dad's dying at the most important part of our lives, right?
Right.
How could that be true? So I was open to having that, but I didn't know what it would look like. And then going through the program and then slowly introducing God into it and then getting to that point where now I'm having this revelation of, wow, you know, I was meant to go through the things that I did to become who I am now.
Yeah.
You know, adversity breeds success, right? And
right.
that's my story. That's your story. I mean, that's everybody who's been through that recovery can kind of come to that conclusion of like, I'm grateful for that. You know, I'm grateful for the addiction. And people are like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, think about it.
Yeah.
That's who I was. And if I didn't go to recovery, what would I be? I'd either be dead or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And now look at me. You know, yeah. I have the wife. I have the house. I have the future family. Like, the things that weren't in my deck of cards at that point in time are now in my hands.
Right.
And I'm like, this is awesome.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, like, there's other fellowships and disciplines that talk about that, that the, you know, the pain of our past becomes the thing that we use to help others. And so you sharing your story here today, and which is why we do this, the hope is that whoever is dealing with something similar, you know. And I think there's also a concept that I think is unique to Christianity, which is that God suffers with us.
Right.
Right.
For sure.
And so when you hear the story of Jesus, that this person comes in and suffers, and then suffers this death, that here's this God that suffers with you. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes when we think of God, we think of God doing things to us.
Right.
Right. Or like what Dan, the healing man, says, it's not God doing things to you or for you, but we eventually get to this point where it's God doing things through us.
And with us.
And with us.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Emmanuel, right? God with us, right? And that's such a great concept, I think, that's often missed in the presentation of Christianity. But I think it's so important to acknowledge that, you know, that's really kind of fundamentally one of our core beliefs, right? Is that's what we're believing in, that God's there with us. And I think that in turn kind of turns into kind of like your work now. So your work now today, how do you feel like you're living this call out, you know, to help others and to bring others to some sort of resolution or recovery?
I think, and this may be just because of the culture of No Longer Bound since I've been there, but I definitely think my calling is to help other people. You know, I always gravitate towards the younger crowd because I got in recovery early.
Right, yeah.
And I feel like I can advocate for that in a different level, you know? And so I definitely think that's part of my calling, is to help other people.
Yeah.
In recovery and in anything else, other, you know? I could motivate people. I feel like I got a pretty good energy.
Yeah.
So I'm just now coming around to that. And that's almost 10 years removed from my addiction.
Right.
So it's not something that happened overnight.
Right. Yeah. Well, we got some people are messaging on Instagram, which is pretty awesome. So I want to look at this and see what some folks are saying. Drug abuse raves. Let's see. Oh, let's see. That's Harvest Valley Church. Says, we have to head to work, but we hope to hear this later. Oh, parents need to hear this. It can be painful. A lack of understanding the depth of a child or adult child is great. Yeah, thank you for that. Awesome. Thank you, Harvest Valley Church. Thank you for joining and tuning in. And I mean, that's true. Like, about parents, right? I mean, I have kids. You keep saying it sounds like you're about to have kids.
In the future, for sure.
In the future.
Yeah.
And so that's a tough thing, man, when you're... And so how do you... Because I had the whole say no to drugs education.
For sure.
And if that was the case, you know... And so I think, like, when we look at it, it's like, what is it that's driving us to use drugs? Like, what is so bad about life that we feel like we have to escape, you know, through drugs and alcohol? So what was on your mind when you had an opportunity to come on here? I mean, what was something that you felt like, you know what, I really want to get this across?
I think for me, it's, again, it goes back to that, what is my calling, is to help that younger crowd, because it's getting worse and worse. You know, over the last 5 years, it's getting worse and worse.
Yeah.
And I've seen so many people that I went to school with die from this, you know, from drug abuse. And I think for me, it's just to put me out there, put my story out there. And if one person hears it, gives me a call or gives you a call, and be like, hey, I heard that and it helped me.
Right.
Whether that's the parent, like, hey, it helped me do this. And now my son is seeking treatment or whatever. So there wasn't really anything specific other than that. Just share my story and then kind of freestyle with you on, you know, theories and stuff. Like, you know, what they said, you know, parents need to hear this.
Yeah.
When I'm talking to a parent, that's talking about a son or daughter that's trying to get, they want them to get help. Yeah. I'm like, well, where are they at with it? And they're like, well, they're really not ready. And I'm like, okay, well, we could want it so bad for them. Like so bad.
Exactly.
And they may not even, it won't work if they don't want it.
Yeah.
And what worked for me is, and I guess we're not going to go into my story because it's detail. I get super detailed, but
yeah.
One thing that my mom did was detach from me. So I had been I was 18, locked up, felony burglary charge.
Okay.
She bonds me out because a friend of hers makes her feel bad that I'm in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Bonds me out. I immediately go back to a friend's house. I'm using again, and this, 8 months goes by. I get the letter in the court, court date, blah, blah, blah. I guess my mom heard about me using heroin. She invited me out to lunch. I didn't know this. She invited me out to lunch. I'm like, yeah, free lunch. Why not?
Right.
So I meet with her at a Waffle House. We're eating. I get done. She's crying. I'm like, what are you crying about? I was a jerk to her. And she goes, she's looking behind me. I turn around. There's two bounty hunters. She's revoked my bond.
Oh.
Now I'm back in jail. Whoa. And I'm super, super mad at her. Right?
Yeah.
But I was in there for about 4 or 5 months. I can't even remember how long now. But that was that time I told you about where I had to be. I was in a spot where I had no choice but to listen and reevaluate what I was doing. So, and, I'm a smart kid, so I realized I do have a problem.
Yeah.
And I do want to change, but the work that you have to put into it, I wasn't willing to do everything that needed to be done. So,
right. You
know, 4 months goes by, court date after court date, they give you all these options. And pretty much my mom was telling me, like, hey, you need to take the jail time or we're not going to have a relationship. And I'm like, wow. So I remember I had a friend whose grandfather works at No Longer Bound, and I knew about it. I didn't know what exactly it was. I just knew it was like a place you can go and work.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way he said it. So I mentioned that in court. Let me rewind. Sorry. I'm telling my lawyer, hey, let's go to the Navy. I'll do that. I'm 19, trying to do anything I can to get out of jail.
Yeah.
And he's like, yo, that's a good idea. The judge is an ex-naval officer. This should be a slam dunk. He walks in 5 minutes later. Yeah, the judge shut that down. And I'm like, well, mention No Longer Bound. He walks out. I don't even step foot in the courtroom. He comes back and says, you're going to No Longer Bound.
Wow.
I didn't even go into court, man. It was that crazy. That's how well-known No Longer Bound already was in the court system. So they said, you have 30 days to go. I get out. I call No Longer Bound. This guy answers the phone. And I go, hey, I want to get in. He's like, okay, do you have $4,000? And I'm like, nope. I hung up on him. My mom was super mad. I was like, just take me home. I left, went to my friend's house again, started using. I mean, I'm pushing every limit.
Yeah.
Pushing every limit. Finally, I called my probation officer about a week later, and she was like, you have about 25 days to get back into the program or to get into the program. You're going to jail. I called the guy again. He's like, do you have any furniture, any car, anything to trade in to come into the program? I said, no. He's like, all right, just write us a letter. So I go home. My mom, I write this letter. She takes it. She rewrites it because it's terrible because I'm a loser. I'm not owning anything.
Right.
And I send it in. They immediately send it back and say, hey, your mom wrote this. And I said, no, she didn't.
Wow.
They're like, whatever, man. Just come in Monday for an interview. So that's literally the 29th day.
Wow.
I get a call on Saturday morning, Tim, going, hey, you know what? That's our golf tournament. Come in Tuesday. So now I'm like, that's the 30th day. I come in Tuesday, man. They take me in with $200 to my name.
Wow.
And that saved my life.
Wow.
So, and it all goes back, dude. I was a loser in the sense that I wasn't willing to do what it took to get in. And I got lucky, and they took me in. And the moment I was there, the next day, I knew I wasn't going to leave. Because there's something there. You see those people that have that peace, that aura about them, that they've got their crap together. And you're like, I want that. So that's what I chased the entire time I was there. I was like, I want that, what he's got.
Yeah.
So.
Wow, man. That's amazing. I love how you pushed it to the 29th, 30th day.
I'm telling you, man.
I mean, the last possible minute, you pushed it to that last moment. And also, too, I love how you own the fact that, there was nothing enlightened about your decision to go.
Mm-mm.
And which is much like mine. Like, I just kind of got to a place where I was like, man, I can't, I'm not willing to do the things that I'm going to have to do to keep using.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to live that life. So it wasn't anything. It was actually more selfish for me. And for you, you were kind of like, you really had no choice. It was either that or jail.
Mm-hmm.
And this was going to be a better alternative. And I think, too, like that speaks to the grace that we receive, right, mm-hmm. in recovery.
Oh, man, yeah. I got so much of that.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah. That's amazing. And so that's probably what, you know, I guess drives you here today to be such an advocate for No Longer Bound. And I've worked personally one-on-one with a lot of guys who have went through there. And you know, I can see a lot of growth and a lot of potential. And so it's been really good to see, you know, people get that. And they have that time in there to really work through a lot of this stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, and get on the other side. I went to a six-week program. But for me, I was, you know, my wife was not, she was a, it was a safe place. My home was a safe place. Mm-hmm. My job sent me to rehab.
Wow.
So my job was a safe place. So when I got out, talk about grace, right? Like, I still had my truck. I still had my house. Wow. I still had my job. I still, my wife was still there with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody else that I was in rehab with, I mean, 97% of them were all getting served divorce papers.
Right.
Leaving that place to right. nothing. You know, their jobs had fired them. And I just thought, I felt like, you know, that God had given me a launching pad,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that it was kind of a, I don't know, responsibility, but it was like, you know, hey, I'm giving you a chance because I want you to do something
right
with this. And it wasn't for years and years later where we finally started this, Most High thing. And that just kind of came out of I was in a spiritual retreat, and I was on a top bunk underneath an exit sign. I couldn't sleep. and it was like, you know, I felt like the question was, well, what do you even want? And so, I mean, I'm probably 5 years sober at that point, maybe. And that was the first time when I was like, oh, that's right. Like, I might actually be able to want something that's of value to humanity.
Exactly.
To myself, mm-hmm. to my family. You know, like mm-hmm. that concept that I could want something good for myself was so foreign.
So foreign.
Right? And I was like, oh, well, what do I want? Well, I'd love to do this. And then we just started pursuing it. And it took a couple of years to get it moving. But I felt like, you know.
Is that the Most High Media?
Yeah.
That you guys were doing? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we originally started with it as the Most High Show. We were just doing faith stories. And that was good. And once we honed into recovery, it seemed like there was a energy or emotion that started happening beyond our own.
For sure.
You know? So just pay attention to the signs and keep it moving, you know? So, man, I mean, this has been great, man. I really love how you communicate. And so I'm hoping that, you know, you come back and do
Absolutely.
Some more. And, you know, I'd love for you to even... get some of the guys that you're working with or know that want to share their story,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that's what this platform's for. It's about really getting the word out, letting people know that we do recover. There is hope. And no matter where you're at, if you are listening to this, you've gotten this far, and you're feeling the pressure of addiction and the weight of the darkness of your life, George and I have been there, and we can tell you that we do recover.
Oh, yeah. It's possible.
It's possible. And it's worth, this is a big key thing, I think, is you're worth the work. You're worth the work that it takes to live a life in recovery. And you're worth it, and the people that you're going to touch after are worth it, too.
For sure.
Yeah. You have any final thoughts you want to drop? Any gems of wisdom?
No, I mean, it's a, we did this, so we're building this dorm on property. It's the new, it's a 56 man dorm. So it's going to add 16 additional beds to the program.
Nice.
Before they put the sheetrock and insulation up, they did what's called Bless This House. And all the guys,
yeah.
some of the board members and all the staff got together, and they wrote their favorite quote and Bible verse
uh-huh.
with their names.
On the studs, right?
On the studs yeah. and the plywood, right? And I wrote this quote that I really like, and it's called, it says, "Later can become never, do it now." Super simple, right?
Yeah.
But it spoke to me so well because I called No Longer Bound. They said $4,000, and I said no. So that later, you know, I'll call them later, almost became never.
Yeah.
But I did it.
Yeah.
And it saved my life. Again, they let me in with $200 to my name.
Right. Who would have thought that that was going to even be a possibility?
Yeah.
And that's it, man. You do it now. And that's really sums up kind of my life. I have no idea what I'm doing. You know what I mean?
Not too.
I just take a step and I'm like, oh, wow, this is working. Mm-hmm. You know, and I do think that when you allow the possibilities that you can recover and that good things can happen to you and to begin to redefine what good things are. Because when we were getting high, a good thing was a bag of dope.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And you are going to slowly understand that that stops being a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have now is far much more lasting. And so, man, thanks again
Absolutely.
For sharing. Thanks again for being here.
Thanks for having
me.
Thanks
for Ty for running the switcher over there. And for David and James helping set things up. And my girl Leslie, who has fled the scene. So this is the Most High Show. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
Thank you.